Scarpins Audio.
Oh, here comes trouble. Put your helmet on. We'll be heading for a fall.
Hey guys, welcome to View from the Cheap Seats. We are the Sklar Brothers, and we are so happy to be with you this week. We got a fantastic show. What I love about this show, and what I love about the fact that there are many different sports in the world, we're kind of at an interesting time right now. Baseball's locked out, and we don't even have really preseason stuff to talk about there. NFL is in the playoffs, so that is very exciting. Hockey's kind of going a little bit right now. But we can sit here and actually take a whole episode and talk about a sport that we are increasingly more interested in, and that is, of course, MMA. We're going to sit down with our buddy Ben Roy from the TV show Those Who Can't, and the Growlix Saves the World, and he's one of the leads or stars of the 97.9 The Rat Race. Donnie D, one of the creators of it, just one of our great friends and a great comic who we worked with in Denver this past weekend. Love it. We're going to get deep into it with him. And in the quick hit section, we are going to talk about there's so many good stories to talk about, including a back and forth Twitter sort of battle, little beef back and forth between Cejudo and Conor McGregor. Just good stuff all the way around. And later on the show, Ozzie Guillen has a way, as we mentioned before, the baseball MLB is locked out. Players are locked out. Maybe Ozzie Guillen has a way to solve that problem for us. So we're going to get into that. But first, top take, Jay. Let's talk about Djokovic. Let's talk about Kyrie Irving. Let's talk about the fact that, hey, you got to get vaxxed or you don't get to play in things. And by the way, it's not your call.
Yeah. So you work for – I know in tennis it feels like, oh, I play for myself and, oh, I'm just an individual. And I can on some weird level understand Djokovic's like maybe digging in his heels a little bit more because – he's not a part of a team. He doesn't have to answer to anyone else. He's not a part. But this, to me, is Kyrie Irving is the problem with the NBA. It's like, look, you don't have a medical exemption. You don't have a reason. You just don't believe in it. You've got enough proof that it's not damaging. Just get the shot.
Yeah.
Get it, and you can play. Your team needs you. Kevin Durant is out for 4 to 6 weeks.
Or don't play.
So what are you saying? Or don't play. Like, what are you saying to the city of Brooklyn, what are you saying to the organization that has invested so much time and energy into you? You're saying my personal needs come before the team. I'm not a part of anything. I only play for myself and screw everyone else. And to me, that attitude is costing Brooklyn. Brooklyn's talking about trading Harden. Like there's like the team's going to get broken up. They will never, that big three will never have a chance to do anything. And they could have. People were talking about how they were going to win it all.
Yeah, they really were. And can you imagine if Brooklyn did emerge from the East and they played the Golden State Warriors, what an unbelievable NBA Finals, the storyline that would be. Durant against his old squad. I mean, to me, that would be fascinating.
Incredible.
And interesting and cool, like Durant and Harden against the Golden State team that literally Durant then went to after they beat them in OKC. Would have been fascinating, would have been amazing. All of this completely now in jeopardy because of one person's decision not to do something that your work says you have to do.
Gotta do it. Gotta do it if you want to work. You can't sit out there and bitch. Go do it.
And I love how Djokovic is like, all the Serbians are like, well, the Australian Open isn't great now because he's like, yes, people like Djokovic. They do, but they don't like him as much as they like Federer. They don't like him as much.
Get ready for him to be locked out of the French Open.
By the way, and Nadal said it best. Nadal was asked about it, and he very, very diplomatically was like, look, man, nobody's bigger than the sport. You aren't bigger than the sport. So no one person can like have the things that they want supersede the rules of the game. There are rules of a game. Like what if he just stopped following the rules in the game and just was like, look, I'm going to not change over this way because I like serving this way. I like the wind and I like the way the sun is. And so you stay over there. I'm going to go over here. He would never do that. He has respect for the rules of the game, but this feels very disrespectful in that way.
That's right. And it's also disrespectful to if you're a fan of the sport and a guy chasing arguably the world record for Grand Slam wins, not going to get to do it for a while.
So
the more you age, the harder it gets.
So this is what I say. This is what I say. And this is what I say to people who don't want to get vaccinated, period. You don't want to get vaccinated? Fine. You're playing like Russian roulette a little bit. And if you get it, maybe it's not going to be that big of a deal. And maybe you make it through and everything's fine. But if you're not going to follow the rule that the league is telling that you have to follow, then you can't play. So you can't have it both ways. You can't be like, I'm not going to get vaccinated and I want to play. Like, I'm not going to follow the rule and I want to play. So choose to not follow the rule, make your stand, and then don't play.
Yeah, don't fight it in the courts. Don't have courts of appeals to try to get you in down there. Just say, all right, they said I can't play. My choice is not to get it. I'll get into a tournament when either the pandemic ends and it's not a requirement anymore or not.
It's more important for me to not believe in science and take this stand than it is for me to play in this thing. Then you don't get to, if you make that choice, then you don't get to complain about your legacy and this and that and all the other stuff. You have to take it. Make that choice and take it. You make your choice and you take it. That's it. That's the way it goes.
You don't put the asterisk on your name. The sport does. History does. You don't get to put it on.
That's right. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk UFC with Ben Roy. I'm so excited. And later on the show, Ozzy Guillen. I can't wait. They're all making. We in Sanoga. We'll talk about all of it. We're going to do it all. It's the Sklar Brothers. It's View from the Cheap Seats. Don't go anywhere.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. We are so psyched to have this gentleman on, not just because we are buddies with him, but also because he has tremendous knowledge of the UFC and MMA and all things connected. He is Ben Roy from Those Who Can't.
What's up, buddy? Hey. And we got to hang with you this past weekend. You got to feature for us. What a treat, man.
It was really fun. A little backwards, you know, being that, you know, for a fair amount of time, I was your boss, and I know you were. You know, but that's Hollywood.
Hey, man, we appreciate, and let me just say that, like, there are a handful of people who have written some great things for us to do, where we just come in and just do exactly what's written, or if there's a little bit to play around with, we'll do it. Whereas, you know, and you're one of those people, and Rob Corddry's one of those people, so like. Just appreciate you so much for the opportunities that you've given us. And it was just great to like just hang with you and your son.
I'm glad I'm on Rob Corddry's staff. I was telling my son, because my son Milo came to the shows in
Amazing
Boulder.
Kid. Yeah. Yeah. So cool.
And I was telling him, I miss everybody from Those Who Can't. I felt like, you know, it's like you spend so much time together when you're filming something and then you don't see people, everybody goes back to their lives. So it was great to hang with. And so funny as usual. That new set is great.
Think about who was on those and in some of those shows with us. Kyle Kinane, Rory Scovel.
Yeah, Marilyn Reischke.
Marilyn Reischke. It was Bronger did stuff, I'm sure. TJ Miller.
John Doerr,
Jerry Miner. I mean, it was like... Yeah, Patton Oswalt, and it was just incredible. Like, just truly, truly awesome.
It was fun. So, Haname Lee, like, there was just so many fun people. So
Haname Lee.
Well, I love it. And we kind of started talking because Jay and I are, as we mentioned on the show, doing the reboot of Cheap Seats for the UFC, and it's going to be called the Nosebleeds. And we start talking about it with you, and of course, I mean, I remember the Grolic Saves the World episode you did where you were basically, you jiu-jitsu'd Adam Caton Holland and Andrew Orvidal. Or you like, didn't everybody, it was like a round robin fighting.
Like we have the podcast, the Grolic Saves the World, and we take on passive aggressive self-help challenges to, then compete once we've done to see who's better at it. So I convinced them to try jiu-jitsu, and I've been doing martial arts since I was in my early 20s, and I'm 42 now. So, but 20 years of Japanese jiu-jitsu, and then Brazilian jiu-jitsu now. So, and I teach Brazilian jiu-jitsu here in Colorado. So,
amazing. And you were on board with UFC, and since UFC 1, which actually took place in Denver, Colorado, in the Mile High City, 1993.
National Western Complex.
So I'm curious because, like, I'm curious how you got into it. Like,
was it the draw of can jiu-jitsu beat karate or can boxing beat X, like disciplines against disciplines? What pulled you in?
The first UFC 1 would first pull. I mean, I was like a miscreant skateboarder the first thing, the thing that pulled me in was that it was violent. Like, it was like, what is this?
Right.
I didn't know anything about a lot of the disciplines, And as proof of that, I believed Kung Fu would beat everybody.
Right.
Do you know what right. I mean? Like, right?
We're taught that, like, Bruce
from
Lee.
From the movies, Bruce Lee can kick anyone's ass.
Like, you find the biggest guy out there, and Bruce Lee is just, like, walks on air and destroys him.
Oh, yeah. And that was the best part. We were talking about this in the green room. The best part about the early jiu-jitsu was, like the early UFC was, like, you would have... You know, they'd be like, Sifu Grandmaster, he's a 9th degree black belt in Jilin Chuan Fa Kung Fu. And they'd have this little guy. And then it'd be like, Division One wrestler from the University of Iowa. Right. And you'd be like, and everybody'd be like, I think the wrestler. And you'd be like, no way, Kung Fu's
no
got
way.
The,
wrestler is going to get toasted. Little guy is going to destroy him. Jackie Chan style, using a ladder to kick his ass.
Yeah, right. and then of course the wrestler just comes across and Hulk, boom, 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 Hulk smash,
just throws him to the side, throws him to the other side, gets him down the ground, rear naked choke, and then he's gone.
And then that was it, and you were like, whoa, there are levels to this. Like the guy that's teaching some form of kung fu in a dance studio in their off hours didn't beat the guy that wrestled in the Olympics. That's crazy, Tom.
Yeah, shocking. Right.
But it is shocking.
And you do realize how quick, like, you know, there are two types of, I think, fighting. There's many types of fighting, but when you watch a lot of UFC matches, like, there are guys who want to get guys on the ground and just ground and pound, and then there are guys who are like, I can kick you in the face or punch you in the face and knock you out.
Right.
And it feels like those two things are kind of like, if someone can do both, then you stand to do really well, I think.
Right. I think when it started, it was all specialists.
Right.
And then there were a few of the early, very early UFC legends in the sport. And really, Hoist Gracie kind of was that. Like,
He was.
Valet Tudeau was mixed martial arts, although they didn't have a ton of striking. He would kind of lead with his front leg and kick at the...
Right.
There wasn't a ton of striking to it, but they understood you started on your feet, but then they would muckle on and... But then after that, you started to see fighters like Kimo, who had good, and then really to me, Ken Shamrock and Frank Shamrock were the first like guys that really embraced like a full, well-rounded like cross training of like ground and stand up.
I mean, you looked at Ken Shamrock and you're like, in any context, like you just see that. If you saw that guy at the public pool with his shirt off, you're like, that guy's an athlete. That guy
he's an action figure. I saw his body and I was like, I used to burn you with magnifying glasses.
Right, that's right.
Right, dude. You're a Marvel superhero walking among us.
Or you're a linebacker for Notre Dame. Like, that's what you look like to me.
Yeah, and you have, like, he the Lion's Den, their first gym was like, really the first place, like that first big MMA team, like that. And I, that's where I started to like geek out, and they were nuts. Those early dudes were not what you see now. Not like people who were lifelong MMA enthusiasts. Now we're seeing this first crop of like, people who grew up on mixed martial arts, you know, like,
yeah, I mean, those trailblazer guys. And as they were trying to figure out what it was, and that's really where our show is going to live, is kind of the early missteps and mistakes. Cause with anything, you're going to like try and figure out like, who do we get to announce this thing? Let's get Brian Kilmeade from Fox and Friends. That'll be a good idea. No, it's not.
No, we won't
do the ring interviews. Maybe that's not a good. Have you seen him?
No one knew anything. Like,
nobody knew
No one knew anything. Because really, I mean, the first UFCs were really Horian Gracie trying to do his best to proliferate the spread of Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Exactly.
It was to showcase the art form of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and then slowly over time, I think they like after that first one, they were like, people actually want to watch this shit. And are bloodthirsty, and people in Denver are nuts. Like, I mean,
yes, like, we were trying to talk about that as we were leaving Denver. Jay and I were like, what's interesting to me about Denver is like, it's a Western city. And typically a lot of these Western cities, they're like based on kind of long ago cowboy culture, like cowboys came in. And now Denver has done a good job to distance itself from that. And it's kind of like, you know, we were joking. We jokingly say that it used to be a craft beer town. Now it's, then it was like a weed town and now mushrooms are legal. So it's like a shroom town. You're like, there used to be a beer fest in there. And we're like, you can't have a beer fest in a shroom town.
Yeah, that's, that joke was so, that
that's
was
like
so
having
good.
A book fest in Colorado Springs. It just doesn't make sense. But the idea that, like, you know, it distanced itself from that, but there's still a lot of people in Denver who are like almost like Alaska in the way of like, I came to Denver because I love it here and I'm going to go rock climbing and I'm going to go out in nature and I'm going to go ride these bikes and I'm going to go do this. It's like people have an intense sort of love of the place.
In and connection to physicality.
And, that's right. That's right. And yeah, I think it, that seeps into it as well.
It's also, you know, I mean, this was a place of cowboys and of like the cattle industry, but also this is where the beatniks settled.
That's
and
right.
You have Naropa University and the School of Transcendental Thought.
Right.
And so you have this insane cross-section of people who are very much don't tread on me still. Like,
right.
Like, there's a reason why we legalize marijuana and mushrooms, because it's like, it's a very, it's kind of a libertarian kind of vibe.
And don't
like,
tell me how to live. Don't get in my life sort of a thing. There is a little bit
like we won't be governed by the Bible. The southern states, but we also aren't going to go in the other direction all the way.
It's philosophy, and so much of mixed martial arts is my philosophy versus yours.
Right.
Like the philosophy I use, like there's every discipline in my, what we're gathering is like can be boiled down to a philosophy. Philosophy of like, I get you on the ground and I can like, I can twist your ankle in a way that makes you want to cry. That if I twisted far enough, that's it. Like you think about like Ronda Rousey's victories. We're all about her getting into that arm bar and then it's over. She gets the arm and pulls back on it.
But Ronda was an example. Like Ronda's an example. She was the Hoist Gracie of women's fighting in the sense that she was a specialist. And and what you saw was women's MMA and mixed martial arts evolve past her, because that's what judokas do. I mean, even when we train like Brazilian jiu-jitsu folks, we know they have nasty arm bars. But really, like the rest of their ground game is they don't focus a ton on that. That's not so when you stand with them, you take them down, just keep your arm out of their way. And you usually can avoid a fair amount of their submission. That's not all of it. I mean,
no,
they're amazing martial arts.
You know, it's a way to combat it. And you sort of looked at that, the pivotal fight where I would say her career ended with Holly Holm. She was the worst possible matchup for her. Why?
Because she was tall. She had a huge reach and she would kick you in the face.
Right. And she could keep her at bay with her striking and whatnot. It was like, you're not going to get her. Like you can't get in, because in order for her to get inside, she have to shoot inside, but she's going to get take a bunch of shots, and she did.
Yeah. It would really bum me out, because I'm Denver. I love Denver and I love Colorado. And I felt like Kat Zingano was such a, people built that up because Kat is such a scrapper. But the problem is that I feel like Kat has to be inside fighting. She has to be up close.
Right.
Whereas Holly Holm presented a very difficult challenge because she did not mind fighting outside stay away, pop shot, step back, pop a shot, step back. And she just picked her apart and it was beautiful. Whereas like Kat wants to be in close. She wants to make it dirty. She wants to throw knees.
Right.
She wants to clinch. She wants to be grimy. And I think that backfired. That's where like Ronda lived at that time. So yeah, but that whole thing, I mean, we could do this for hours, but it's
I love it. To me, what's fascinating to me as well is like, listen to how excited and how much you know about the female game. To me, I don't think that exists in any other sports where you have tons of male fans who definitely understand this. That like,
yeah.
You know,
it's like you don't hear a lot of that. I was going to say, you don't hear a lot of basketball fans talking about why certain teams are great in the WNBA. I mean, you may hear tennis fans talk about why the Williams sisters are great. I think that's the closest comp. Other than
or the U.S. women's soccer team or volleyball, like the U.S. women's soccer team,
volleyball.
But still soccer heads, like real, truly football heads, so to speak. they are talking about the English Premier League and they're talking about the Bundesliga and they maybe will go deep in the La Liga in Spain and maybe Serie A, but they're not going to go super deep into the female leagues because really the women's game comes around during the Olympics like every right. 4 years and the World right. Cup every 2 years. So you got every 2 years you kind of have like the women's game kind of rises up. Whereas I know there's a league and a professional league and it's big, but most male fans don't. Whereas UFC, you know, lots of dudes can tell you.
I feel like we're in Dana White's karma because he said for so long he would not have women in the UFC. And then Ronda Rousey changed his entire opinion. And then now you have, I mean,
Rose Namajunas is, you know, the Peña Nunes fight. The Peña Nunes fight was just incredible.
They can headline a card. They can headline a card of male fights.
But it's some of the undercard fighters who are going to be amazing. Loma Lukbonmi. Look, I can never say her last name. Lukbonmi. Uh-huh. She's the Thai fighter. Once she develops like much more of a ground game, her stand-up game, the way she throws a kick in that full classic Thai style where she just whap. She is so great. I love grimy fighters. Like I love J.J. Aldrich is great. Montana De La Rosa. I have a lot of friends who are fighters who fought in mixed martial arts. I've met a lot of UFC fighters just through the proximity of training in Denver. Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm close to any of them, but I've trained with a bunch like Neil Magny I've rolled with before. And like, they're always the most humble. There's not been any that I've met where I'm like, fuck that guy. Like, I mean, I'm sure there is if you're training in a gym with them, but
sure.
From like everyone so far, one of the black belts that I train with has a D&D a daily, like a weekly D&D thing. That's and for hilarious. A while, Cody Donovan, who's one of the main coaches for Elevation Fight Team, has like a cloak and he's like, he's got like
he's got a scepter,
accoutrement to it. I think it's Cody. I don't remember. It's one of them. If it isn't Cody, I apologize. But there's like, they're kind of nerdy. Like they're a lot of them.
It is a bit of a, it's like a tech. It's like, to me, I view them as like the people, and we grew up loving this too. And so I can connect with the audience this way as like the people who love the band Rush, because Rush was like this hard rock, classic rock band, but it was a for techie kind of nerdier people who understood the technicalities of it.
Prog rock. It was prog rock.
Prog rock, progressive. And but like, so all the people who listen to Rush, and it was mostly dudes, but still, like, there's actually like a, I think there is, again, because of the egalitarian nature of it, I do think the violence sort of maybe pushes it away from a lot of women. However, I think the egalitarian nature of the fights, the fact that women can headline a card, a UFC card, it's kind of amazing to me because you just don't see it in any other sport. Like, to me, it's...
Well, and it's why also that MMA buried boxing, because MMA has a unified belt system. They make the fights that everyone wants to see.
They make the fights everyone wants to see. Like this Masvidal-Covington, right? Masvidal-Covington fight. That... Dude, this fight is insane. Like, look at how much is on the line. If Masvidal loses, it's his third loss in a row, and I think it's over for him. Like, right?
It's tough to say because people like to watch him fight. I mean, if you look at Cowboy Cerrone, Donald hasn't really performed as of recently all that well, but still a massive draw. And you look at female fighters, Raquel Pennington has had some tough stretches, but she stayed in it because but they stay in it because they grind and they're fun to fucking watch. And even if they lose, you're like, they left it out there, you know? And that, like, Raquel Pennington's another one of my favorite fighters because she gets in there and she just trades, like, does not care. She is like Rock, their nicknames, you know, her fight name's Rocky, and it's like that. She'll take shots, she'll give them. Those are the people that, like,
But what's crazy is, so we're talking about all this stuff, and yes, there are all these people are like such big, it's amazing. And the best thing for UFC that other names have emerged that the general public can kind of sort of get to know and understand rather than just even the super, super uber UFC fan. But obviously Conor McGregor is like one of the biggest names. The question is, you know, as he started gaining weight, I'm like, is he gaining weight for a Jake Paul fight? He's gaining so much weight that I'm like, dude, he's 195 or 190 and he's jacked up right now.
I don't know how he sleeps with USADA rapping on his window every night. Right? Like, that guy, I mean, that kind of poundage he's put on, his shoulders are fucking massive.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I also think some of it seems to be coke bloat, but I mean, he is fucking, he has lost his fucking mind. Like, that guy,
But when you say he's lost his mind, let's go back to what you were saying before. He still is the biggest draw. I think if they make a fight with him and a high profile person, I think people are still going to watch that across the board.
Depends on for who. I hate to say it, for me, I'm just not interested in watching him fight anymore. I think it's boring. I think the clown thing is, and like the shit talking, the reason why it was interesting before is because he backed it up.
Yeah.
Right before that Aldo fight, I was convinced that Aldo was going to leg kick him to death like he had done to everybody. And then he just knocked his chin and I was like, that's it. I mean,
that's it.
You guy can't argue. Like, he can talk shit and like, but
and
now
it's,
now it's just, I feel like after the Diaz fight and
Diaz just seems like, he doesn't care. I saw Diaz walking out of the, he like went to watch the fight. He was walking out of the ring and he made like he was going to throw a punch at someone and the guy
and
threw
spilled his beer
all over himself and he just walked out of there. I'm like,
wasn't that Mayweather? I don't know who was that.
No, I don't know who, but I was like, Diaz just does this stuff for fun. Like, for him, he's like the comedian who just does bits that nobody sees.
To me,
just
he's the DMX of the UFC. Like, he's the, he's just,
he'll be dead soon.
Maybe because they live like they're not, there's not, it's like there are some where it's like that this is all part of the mystique and it's very carefully planned.
Right.
But the crazy thing about it is I have a number of friends who have at points trained with Nick Diaz doing jiu-jitsu. I have never, ever heard anything negative about Nick and Nate. Like, anybody who's
I'm sure
the
people who train with them love them. Like, those feel like you're like, those are the guys you want rolling with you in case like anything goes down.
But they're like, everybody said they're very humble. They're very friendly. Like,
I think
they're both kind of socially anxious and nervous people. Like,
wow.
I think his reaction, I think that this is like Stockton shit is like, they're like just hard dudes. Like,
that's how they live. And there are other people who are like, I want to be an athlete in this sport. And it's less about, it's funny because that's interesting too. It's like, why do people get into MMA? Why do people get into it? Well, some people are just like, I have all this aggression. I want to take it out on someone in a legal way. And so I'm going to do it right here. It's either do this or become a cop. And the other thing is like,
some people are like, hey, I want to be a huge star.
Right.
And this is my fast track. Like, I'm jumping into the carpool lane, and there's that.
Well, so like you look at Colby Covington as a prime example. You mentioned him before. This was a guy who was fighting pretty well, but has a fairly boring style.
Right.
I mean, that style of wrestling is punishing. It's grueling. It's terrible to be flat against the wall, having somebody grind into you that whole time. It's not particularly fun to watch.
It's not fun to watch at all. It's boring,
it's like
really.
Mayweather. It's like a Mayweather fight.
Yeah,
like a Mayweather fight. Technically, it's good, but like, and you can win and you can grind on someone, but.
But
you
on
know.
Style alone, it also prevents the other guy from landing anything.
Right. And no one wants. So Colby created a character. He made a character. He realized that there is the fight part of this, but there is the entertainment part of it.
Yeah.
I think there are a few people like that. I think in professional grappling, which doesn't make any money, the number one guy right now is Gordon Ryan in no-gi. As far as the best pound-for-pound no-gi grappler in the world is a guy named Gordon Ryan.
Yeah.
And there's not a ton of money to be made for that. So he kind of started this persona of calling himself King Gordon. And he talks shit and he's now made a ton of money and he's reaching into the mainstream now. And, but everybody, by all accounts, anybody I know that's met him or took a seminar or rolled with him is like, Nicest dude. Nicest guy. I heard that about Covington, that he wasn't a bad guy. It's just the shit he does. Like,
I mean, Masvidal seems like a guy who's like, you feel like he's a loose cannon wherever he is in his life.
I think he's a Nate and Nick Diaz. He seems kind of real. He came from all those backyard fighting shit.
Yes.
You know, like that Kimbo Slice background of like, but he actually held up. Kimbo couldn't, you know.
Kimbo won a few fights, and that was amazing. Like when he won the fights he did, but you're just like, that's how great Kimbo was at what he did. That like he was so overmatched by styles. He was just a brawler and a guy who just punched people.
He literally was just a puncher.
That's all he was. And like you put that against like people who have real technical style, he's gonna lose.
Well,
like,
I think that that's part of it. Is I think those backyard fights, you're fighting amateurs. And I think he had won the minute he stepped into that backyard and they got to look at this dude.
Yeah. Because
But then when you step into the UFC, there's scary people. I train with scary people doing jujitsu. I don't freak out immediately when I roll with a big guy. I'm like, if this guy puts the pressure on, it's going to hurt. But I don't freak out a ton. I think that that's what happened is you get in the UFC, people don't freak out about your build as much. You know, like it's the first time you hit them and then you're like, oh, fuck, that hurt. You know, like
that's right. Yeah, that's right. And because
everyone who's walking into this ring belongs.
Right. And if you train exclusively at American Top Team or Factory X here in Colorado or Elevation Fight Team or, you know, Rufus Sport or whatever, you see bad dudes every day. Like you see tough women every day. So. I don't know, but in the backyard, when you're like, I'm a barroom hero, and then Kimbo steps through the barn doors, and you're like,
oh, God, he's already beat you. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you talk about, like, I love that they all often say, like, what gym they're from or fighting out of this place or that. There's a lot of pride in where you come from. And it's like guys and women win. And they win for their whole gym. Like you feel like if you work out at that gym or have, you know, you're a part of that thing, they're winning for you. It's like when friends of ours do like do something really special, like, or they're up for an Emmy or something like that, or they win this or that. It's like,
or they host Saturday Night Live or something like that.
It's for all of us. You know what I mean? Like,
it's good you guys aren't keeping a tally.
No, but I remember when Zach hosted Saturday Night Live, Zach Galifianakis, and we were like, that's the first guy who we know very intimately, who we came up with in comedy, we were like, that's our guy.
Yeah.
He's doing that right now.
And so like,
I think about that all the time. I was at 2000 New Face in 2000, whatever, 10 or something. And like my group was like Fortune Feimster, Colin Jost. I was telling my ex, I was like, Colin Jost just married Scarlett Johansson. Like what the fuck? You know, like, and she, you know, it's crazy. Like I don't know.
We root for it. Or we like, oh, they came from our spot. They came from our style. It is like MMA a little bit
in many ways.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, what do you think? I mean, what do you think is going to happen in this Masvidal fight? I mean, do you feel like he's done or just, it's so unpredictable. You got to watch it. Cause we have no clue.
I mean, people are going to hate me for saying this, but I don't know. People who listen are probably going to hate me. I mean, I think Covington
people are going to hate you for your comedy.
I think I think and my voice. I think Covington takes it. I just think that smothering, grinding style of it's exhausting. There is a chance that Masvidal, but I think Covington has taken licks from really, really tough people. I hate saying that because I don't like the character Colby plays, but if I'm skill, I think he'll pull it out. But I would like to see Masvidal win it. But I think that's wishful thinking on my part. I don't know.
That's fights in March, right?
March.
Sometime. I mean, I'm more excited for. I'm excited that the UFC has a heavyweight bracket again. That is
that's exciting.
Francis Ngannou, Cyril Gane. Oh my God. Someone's going to lose their head.
Yeah. It is exciting. And that again, show up. It's like for NASCAR. They want to see a crash. You want to see like crazy things, sparks fly. And you want to, I've been to UFC and I've seen it and it is insane. Ben, let's take a quick break and we come back. I want to talk about 97.9 The Rat Race, which is your unbelievable podcast.
Maybe my favorite podcast outside of ours.
It sends up every classic rock radio morning zoo, and God damn it, it is so perfect. We did it. Dan Van Kirk did it. It's so great. We'll talk about it on the other side of this break. Ben Roy is our guest. And so much fun just digging deep and talking a little MMA with him.
Oh, man.
This is View from the Cheap Seats. We'll be right back.
Some are born with the psychic inflection. Catastrophic when they go in the street.
Hey, guys. Welcome back to the show. We got Ben Roy with us. Before we tell you what he's getting into, hit up our Patreon. We're doing new episodes of Cheap Seats called Cheaper Seats. Where we break down everything, all these absurd things. It's so much fun.
I'm so glad we did it too, because it put us in the mode to be doing this again. It's, you know, it's been, you know, since 2006, since we've been making new episodes of Cheap Seats, and we just started making these new episodes of Cheaper Seats. All the sports that we couldn't do back then, like, you know, there was not a professional pillow fighting league. There was not, I mean, then we go back in the archives and did some high diving and stuff, but it's just been a blast. So you go to patreon.com/Sklar Brothers, $5 a month. You get that. You get extra content that we're going to do a little thing with Ben Roy here. We get weekly Patreon pods. It's a great value for getting all this extra content, and it gets us in the mode and the mood to do the Nosebleeds, of which we have started writing and we're into it. I'm so excited for this
really
show.
Really fun.
Yeah. Probably this summer, maybe fall at the latest, but I think this summer it's going to drop on Fight Pass UFC. It's Cheap Seats. It's getting rebooted. It's so exciting. And then we just were in Denver. Thanks to all of our Denver friends and fans who came out for those shows. It was amazing. So much fun. We'll be in D.C. February 10th through the 12th at the Comedy Loft. We're going to be at Hilarities March, I believe, around 17th, 18th? 18th, 19th in there. And then we'll be at Moon Tower in April and at the end of April in Austin. And then the Crocodile in Seattle. So
in
excited.
May.
In May. And we'll tell you if there's other things that get added to it. Supersklars.com is that. Let's talk about Ben Roy, 97.9 The Rat Race.
And thanks for having me. This is a big one, guys. This is a big one. This is a podcast that I think I've been dreaming about doing for quite some time.
Sure.
Mainly because I know that you guys, the last time we saw each other was at Jingle Jam 2004.
Animal was going nuts.
Of course, he's got hypoglycemia.
He passed out in the family section.
Yeah. And that was when Brett Michaels' tour bus backed over him. You remember this. This was outside Plaxico Amphitheater.
I can't believe he still hasn't sued him for that. I mean,
But he would never sue Brett.
He would never sue Brett Michaels.
He's such a fan. It's really hard for him to do.
That's because Animal.
I mean, there's a lot of money on the table there.
There is, but CC DeVille, not many people know, is actually Animal's third cousin.
It's a family thing, and he just can't. You don't want to be digging it. So that is a little taste of the stuff you guys write for that. And just
when the House of Whores became the House of Horrors.
So explain who's on the show with you, the other comedic talent.
And how you put this amazing show together, and then we're going to send people to go listen to it because it's
man,
a treat.
You guys plugging it, it's the best. It's myself, Chris Mars, who's an amazing writer and actor. And then Beth Hoyt.
Incredible.
Hilarious.
Yeah, Beth is so funny. Such a funny comic and character actor.
Yep.
She's just so good. And she plays Tara. Chris plays Animal, and I play Donnie D. And then it is all produced and edited and helped to be written by these great people called the Nix Bros.
Love them. Those guys and directed some episodes of Those Who Can't.
Yeah.
It is produced like a very real. I played it for my son, and my son thought it was a real morning show. I'm like, no, this is a joke. Like, even when you guys do the traffic and everything that's underneath those.
The I-71, 76, 74, and the 31 are backed all the way up to the McCaslin Boulevard tunnel. So if you're going to be heading downtown, make sure you take a pause. Of course, that's going to be the March of Dimes is doing their annual.
Are they doing that again?
Yeah, that's great. I don't know what the March of Dimes does.
I think they put dimes in top of their loafers.
They
get the dimes marching into the pockets who need them.
I'll tell you what they do, Donnie D, is they get the job done.
And that's it. And they've been doing it forever. So make sure you come on down, March of Dimes box.
It is.
It's going to be amazing. We're going to be at Old Capler Hill. It's the soapbox races all weekend. No, what it was is this whole idea started because I used to wake my wife up, my good friend and my ex-wife, Crystal. I would wake her up in the morning by doing this.
That's
so
hilarious.
She would be laying there and I'd just... 97.9, the rat race. Your course on with Donnie D, Animal and Tara in the morning. That was Gloria Estefan.
Turn the beat around.
With a little turn the beat around. And so, like, it was actually Rory Scovel, while we were filming Those Who Can't, was like, dude, you got to do this as a regular thing. It kills me.
So there's an amazing NPR thing. And I don't know if we told you about that.
Yeah.
About that. That's Network 77. And we've done that. And it kind of is what you guys are doing for the classic rock radio morning genre. This woman, she's incredible.
It's
Amy Mann's really good friend and does it for... Rachel Network Lee, 77. Yeah. I highly recommend people. It's so good, but for NPR and kind of local NPR, it's
AM,
perfect.
AM local NPR.
And it's just or low FM. It's just perfect. And so, you know, you guys just nail it in the most beautiful and subtle way. And I want everyone here to check it out. Listen to a couple. Listen to ours if you want. Any of them. They're all good. Listen to
them. They're fully scripted.
Yours was so fun to do because we were so excited and you both just ran with it. You know, like people think they're unscripted, but we do draft a script. But you guys played so well with the idea. And basically for people listening in the episode, it's that we unbeknownst to them, give them a DNA test. We do it without them knowing. We take their DNA and we break down
who's who.
And but it goes with every episode.
Our history, our 23andMe sort of like history. Yeah, it's so funny.
It's so funny.
And the twists and turns.
The twists of it are just great. And it really, what I loved about it was like it required us to act on a podcast, which is just so like it required us to pull things off.
One that Dan Van Kirk does is also unbelievable.
When we gave him a New York accent, he was like, I can't do that. And then he was like, how about Chicago? And then we heard him do it. And I was like, no, it should have been that the whole time.
And it works so well.
Yeah, he's the best.
That's what you guys that's what you've always done, especially with Those Who Can't. You're like, what do you guys think? There was a lot of moments where you're like, what do you guys think here?
DVK is a big UFC guy, huh?
He is. He's incredible. He knows his stuff and it's great.
I'll have to fight him.
Let's
jump into some quick hits, Ram.
Let's jump into the quick hits because there's some stuff that's been going on in the world. I want to get in. All right, the Kansas City Chiefs were still in the playoffs, and they'll be in the playoffs this week, and had to run a message on their Jumbotron for the second year in a row that they ran out of fireworks to celebrate touchdowns because they scored too many touchdowns. I don't think you need to apologize for that. Am I right?
Yes, you do.
You do?
Because that's the prize horn of football games. You need that. Like,
listen,
you can't just give a touchdown and not fire them off. Everybody's going to look, and then they're going to be like,
the fuck maybe
was
you're
that?
Right. Listen.
So, but I think the fireworks go the way of the Gatorade shower. We've overused it. Too many people have gotten Gatorade showers. Not everyone
needs
Gatorade.
We're getting Gatorade showers in like the second quarter. We don't need it. Okay? Or the wave. Like, time to move on from the wave. Save it for if you win like a big thing. Look, the Chiefs were like Colin Farrell at a bachelorette party in Vegas, constantly scoring. All right?
There's no need for it. If you're a Chief, like, or if you're buying fireworks for the Chiefs, buy a ton of fireworks because they're going to score a lot.
Oh, also, by the way, it's a humongous flex to say to everybody, we don't have enough fireworks because we've been scoring too much. I mean, like, that's the humble brag of
all
times.
That is cool. That is cool. That part's cool.
We ran out of fireworks, bitches. Why?
I think they relished in that. I think they definitely souped up their apology.
Look, they're keeping going, and so that's good. The Cowboys, on the other hand, Dallas Cowboys, who were favorites, they were playing their game at home, lost. The Cowboy fans keeping it classy by throwing trash at the refs after the game, accidentally threw some of it at their players.
So I don't know if you saw this, but the Dallas was driving to like maybe tie, or I think they were only down by six. So they
had not scored and gotten in the end zone all day.
But they were moving the ball. They were moving the ball and they were moving towards the end zone. They weren't in the red zone, but they were close. And Dak Prescott, instead of throwing the ball to someone on the sidelines, ran 17 yards, slid. And then they all need to get up to the line so they can ground the ball, throw it into the ground.
Right. Clock is like ticking. Clock is ticking.
And the ref, who's running up to like touch the ball and signify that he can snap the ball, bumps into Dak Prescott from behind and knocks him forward. And then they run out of clock. So everyone in Dallas, and they don't change it. So everyone in Dallas is so mad. And they're just yelling. They're throwing stuff at the refs. They're throwing it. Of course, the players are walking off the field with the refs. So the Dallas players are like, not cool that you're throwing stuff at us. Then someone clarified they were throwing at the refs, and then Dak Prescott was like, oh, well, good for them. Like, then he just totally switched his. Like,
yeah, that was so great. Good for them. He's like, yeah. Good for them. Oh, they weren't throwing
at us? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. You're not throwing at us? Then good for them.
He's like, it's disrespectful. It's not cool. Oh, is it the refs?
Try good for them. One more
time. Good. Yeah. That's how it should be.
Yeah. But, I mean, do they have fireworks left? Like, I'm going back to that. Do you think?
I mean, the good news is that Dallas hasn't scored enough to.
Yeah.
They have plenty of leftover fireworks.
They're like, hey, Kansas City, do you need any of ours? Because we certainly couldn't score. We'll sell them to you at cut rate prices. All right.
Detroit is going to use theirs for a 4th of July celebration.
That's right. For the next 10 4th of July.
Yeah.
Either that or they're going to use it to just demolish some buildings downtown that are almost about to fall down. Okay. Now let's. We talked about the back and forth a little bit between Conor McGregor and Cejudo this past week on Twitter. Phenomenal. High level trash talk. I'm there for all of it. I'm going to read some of these tweets because. You're like, if we're talking about McGregor tweeting and we're not really talking about his, you know, fighting and just talking about how jacked he looks, that's not good. It's like, again, no offense to you. It'd be like people talking about your punk band. You're a comic. Right. You're a comic.
Right.
It's like, stop talking about my punk band is fun for me to do that. It's like, I enjoy it and I really like it. For people who don't know, Ben Roy is in a punk band and he's the lead singer of a punk band. But like, it's not the thing that you're like, this is what I want to do. I want to get signed. I don't know. Maybe it is what you want to do. But like,
I love playing music. But yeah, I agree. I'm going to like, yeah, exactly. I know what you're getting at.
So anyway, so Conor McGregor said Henry Cejudo is a little fart. He tweeted that, to which Cejudo, give him credit, man. He said,
immediately.
What do you know about farting? You always run out of gas. That was good.
Dude. Solid.
Boom.
Solid comeback.
And the best part is McGregor deleted the tweet. Like, it was that good.
Well, see, he said, roses are red, lemon is tart. Henry Cejudo is only a little fart. Again, no new information. To which Cejudo said, Notorious MMA, I have nothing but respect for you. Hopefully, when I see you, we can shake hands and you can do a line off my head. Okay, that is high level,
solid dude. Trolling.
What it is it's self-aware.
Yep.
That's the part I like.
Why
he realizes he's a little guy.
Right.
And that I would be shorter than you.
Yes.
But also realizes that Connor is in the middle of a pretty amazing cocaine psychosis.
It's amazing. And McGregor.
Is that what's going on for him? He's all coked out and can't come back.
He's all fucked up. And if everybody would just shut up and stay quiet, there's a good chance he's going to eat himself right in front of
him. So the 34-year-old Cejudo retired in 2020 after successfully defending the bantamweight belt via second-round TKO.
So he's a champion.
Dominic Cruz.
He's a champion.
He's a champ.
He retired a champ. It's so funny. He's like, it's amazing. You know, again, that would be a fun... Look, back and forth. I'd like
to see them fight.
Wouldn't you like to see them fight? I'm so like, so why doesn't UFC, if they have the ability to make these fights, wouldn't that be even if it's not the headlining fight of a card, or do you think it's more of a sideshow?
I don't know that Cejudo is a big enough draw for Dana. Like, that fight is a big enough. And him being retired for a couple years.
Yeah, 2 years. Yeah. That's probably not good.
I don't know. But I mean, if like GSP came out of your retirement, you know, because that would be such a big draw. But Cejudo is not, for whatever reason, he's just not been a big draw. You know,
there's some kind of
fake about his persona. I don't know. Like, it feels a little like he's doing the squeaky clean thing, but it feels disingenuous. I don't know.
There you go. And people can sniff that out. They absolutely can. All right. For our Patreon fans, we've got an extra story that we're going to do. Please sign up, patreon.com/Sklar Brothers. Ben Roy, thank you for joining this show.
I love you guys.
We love you, buddy. 97.9 The Rat Race. Grolic saved the world.
Grolic saved the world. Also,
the Grolic saves the world. It's a banger of a podcast. Make sure you check that one out as well. And you guys helped us do that and get it off the ground, and we can't thank you enough.
We love you guys and that podcast. Fantastic. And benroy.com, maybe? Is that
No, I don't have a .com, but you can find me anywhere at benroy00.
At benroy00. Follow him on Instagram. Follow him on Twitter and see where he's doing stand-up near you, or if he's doing it in Denver, you definitely want to go see him.
And Patreon fans, we're going to talk about a crazy story with him. So you got to sign up for our Patreon.
And we'll be back after this break because we got a voicemail from Ozzy Guillen. What is happening? Can he end the lockout? I don't know, Jay, but if anybody
can.
If anybody can, Ozzy can. And we'll be right back with more View from the Cheap Seats right after this. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. Oh my God, Ben Roy. I love that dude. I just love him. He's just his excitement,
so
his knowledge. It's just incredible. His enthusiasm. It's like, to me, I get excited when I hear someone who's enthusiastic about that.
You know what it also showed me, which is kind of cool, is that there's a history to that sport.
Right.
Like that and the history in the sport. Like you think UFC, it's like, oh, it's new. It just came along a few years ago. No. It's 25 years, a quarter of a century old, and there is a history to it, and it's evolved and it's developed. And I think he captured that in his excitement and his explanation of who sort of came along the way. So that was beautiful. I love it. Before we get out of here, we got a call, as we mentioned before, from Ozzy Guillen.
I always love it. Always love it when he calls. Always.
We're in a lockout, Ran, right now for baseball. We don't know if there's going to be baseball when the year starts. So we don't know.
Who can solve this thing? I think Ozzy could. Let's give it to Ozzy Guillen. Check it out.
Hey, it's Club Bro. It's me, Ozzy Guillen. I calling you guys about an idea that I just have. This baseball lockout is terrible for everyone. Everybody wants to play. All the players want to play. And all of the owner want to have the player play because they can't make their money if the player is not in the spring training, in the regular season, in the postseason, and so on, et cetera. But here's my idea about this one. Look, I have a lot of experience. I have been locked out a lot, not just of the baseball part, but also of my home. I have been locked out from my house a lot. So it's my idea. Is it, you know, me and Bobby Yank, we have a lot of beef right now. But I think that one thing we can do to mend the fence, we can mend the fence if we come up with a plan together. And I get the Bobby Yank, he can stand outside the window of the spring training facility and then lift up, hoist up the player through the bathroom window. And then once we go all through there, everyone is through there, like Shawshank and the Rays in Arizona, and everyone to come through there, and then before you know, we're gonna play softball, 16 in, 12 in, it doesn't matter how many in, we're gonna play that. And once the owners see what's going on there, they're gonna say, oh wait, now we're gonna come back to the bargain table, and we're gonna have a conversation about that. Anyway, it's Ozzy, guys. Okay, Jason, Randy, bye-bye.
Well, there you go. Ozzy Guillen. If anyone can get him out, it's that guy. I trust him. How does he not have a job in the league is all I'm going to say. All right, thank you, Ben Roy. Thank you to at Brad Morris 773. And, of course, thank you to you guys for jumping on our Patreon and supporting us that way. And keep your eyes open for the Nosebleeds. We're in production, and we're going to keep pumping it up. We'll let you know when dates get released about the first one, when it's going to pop out, but we are having so much fun doing it. And for those of you who loved our old Cheap Seats, it's coming back with a vengeance through the UFC. We'll tell you guys how to access it and watch it. And until next week, go punch a waterfall. We're out. To be dead, the street said, your shit's off like wheat bread. Your own block, you make shit they won't knock. I'm a worldwide hustler. Hoes be at us because the old G status. Star Bands Audio, a podcast network.